National COVID-19 Clinical Evidence Task Force. A close friend was part of a private messenger group with a few of her friends. My friend holds no truck with the government's response to the pandemic, the health department's edicts, recommendations and guidelines, nor the advocacy media's prostitution of its rights and privileges. She was the only one in the group who felt this way. The group included a GP who was involved in administering the programmed rollout of the COVID jabs. A little while ago, my friend posted a 35-page article by a retired neurosurgeon on the group chat, in which the author outlined the problems from the official response. See COVID-19 update, what is the truth? The writing was never going to win a Booker Prize, but it did lay out quite clearly just about all the areas where the national and global measures had gone astray, as well as the fallacy of many statements in support of the actions taken and the unwanted outcomes from them. His statements were well referenced throughout. It took me the best part of half an hour to read the article through. Within 10 minutes of posting, there was a response from the GP along the lines of, "I don't know what all the fuss is about, ivermectin. In any case, he's only a neurosurgeon and he's retired anyway." My friend responded with, "I wish someone could provide some data that shows these measures are working." The response to that was a link to the National COVID-19 Clinical Evidence Task Force. It sounds very impressive, and I was keen to see what it would reveal. The web address looked promising, covid19evidence.net.au. However, despite its name, it is not a government website. Primarily, it is a website to provide guidelines for healthcare professionals rather than provide the contrary evidence my friend was asking for. Initially on the website, there is a section called Living Guidelines, which it describes as evidence-based clinical COVID-19 guidelines updated with the latest research. There was little evidence provided, but lots of recommendations, including a multitude of drug recommendations. I'm sure you've heard of hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. I was keen to read what they had to say about them. Ivermectin was listed under drugs not recommended. There was one piece of research evidence provided with 17 outcomes. Of those 17 outcomes, certainty of the evidence was listed as either moderate or low in 16 of them. The remaining outcome for adverse events, certainty listed as high, was that ivermectin has little impact on adverse events. Certainty of the evidence was a most interesting column in many pieces of research evidence. Hydroxychloroquine was referred to twice under a heading chemoprophylaxis. There were guidelines for hydroxychloroquine for pre-exposure prophylaxis and hydroxychloroquine for post-exposure prophylaxis. The pre-exposure recommendation had one piece of research evidence relating to healthcare workers. Study results and measurements were taken from between 1 and 3 studies. There were 7 outcomes, one of which was all-cause mortality. As there were no deaths, that outcome was not considered. Of the remaining 6 outcomes, certainty of the evidence was listed as either moderate, 2 outcomes, due to serious risk of bias, low, 3 outcomes, due to serious risk of bias and serious imprecision, or very low, 1 outcome, due to serious risk of bias and very serious imprecision. The post-exposure recommendation had 2 pieces of research evidence, one relating to people exposed to COVID-19, the other to special populations. In the first of these, certainty of evidence in the 7 outcomes was moderate for 2 outcomes, low for 4 outcomes, and very low for 1 outcome. In the second, certainty of evidence in the 7 outcomes was low for 2 outcomes and very low for 5 outcomes. It seems to me there is a trend. Despite uncertainty in so many areas due to bias, imprecision, and indirectness, this organization has no desire to increase certainty. Indeed, following the not recommended label was the following: "This is a low priority recommendation. and we do not expect to update it in the immediate future. However, we continue to conduct daily searches for new evidence. The next section of the website dealt with clinical flowcharts, and further down the page was a section headed COVID-19 Research. This looked promising. It had three boxes. The centre box was for ANZCTR, the Australian and New Zealand Clinical Trial Registry. It was about existing or upcoming trials, not results. Strike one. The third box was core outcomes for COVID-19 research. Perfect! Except when you click on the link, the site can't be reached. The service IP address could not be found. Strike two. The first box was for the Cochrane Institute, a study register of COVID-19 studies around the world. I've come across the Cochrane Institute previously and wrote about them in the article Science Under Duress. Their website has a tagline: trusted evidence, informed decisions, better health. It's very reassuring when others refer to your information as trusted evidence. When you do it yourself, it can ring hollow. Primarily, the Cochrane Institute doesn't conduct its own studies as much as collate the results of other studies already conducted and analyzes them. In Science Under Duress, I wrote about the surprisingly low number of studies they looked at for their prize-winning report. I saw a repeat of this in the hydroxychloroquine evidence, between 1 and 3 studies. There are, literally, hundreds of studies that have been conducted into the effectiveness of hydroxychloroquine against COVID-19. See the references below. I draw an obvious inference to results of from 1 to 3 studies. The Clinical Task Force website advises that recommendations within this guideline were developed in collaboration with the organizations listed below. It then lists 34 task force members. All of them are listed in alphabetical order, except for the first one, Cochrane Australia, which is listed as the Secretariat. With the listing and the title, it's pretty obvious where they sit in the pecking order. Clicking through to their COVID-19 study registry, one finds 164,387 studies as at the 15th of August, 2022. If we can accept that there weren't many COVID-19 studies conducted before the pandemic, assuming a start date of February 2020, that's an average of about 180 studies per day, every day, for 2.5 years. Think about that for a while and draw your own conclusions. Many of these studies are ongoing. Some of the results are listed as ongoing, but have not been updated. Many of the studies are really very specific, often obtuse, and not of great interest to your average Joe. For example, effectiveness and physiological mechanisms of contemplated diet meditation to increase social connection in young adults in the aftermath of the pandemic. A second example, quantifying the effects of Magna V6 on stress and burnout among nurses during the COVID-19 pandemic. And a third one, effects of inspiratory muscle training on inspiratory muscle strength and endurance and functional capacity of post-COVID-19 patients. Sometimes you come across one that could provide useful information for just about everyone. A single centre clinical study to evaluate the safety and immunogenicity of SARS-CoV-2 mRNA vaccine as heterologous booster in participants aged 18 years and older vaccinated with inactivated SARS-CoV-2 vaccine. Except that it's open label and it's non-randomized, which means that bias will almost certainly skew the results, as both the researchers and the participants know who is being given what. My point is that there is a lot of noise and not so much substance. Try to find what you may be searching for in a registry of more than 160,000 studies is not the easiest of tasks. And if you can find it, there's no guarantee it will provide anything meaningful. If one is of the opinion that the government/health department is pushing a certain agenda that runs contrary to mounting evidence, as a rapidly growing number of people are, then the organisation that is in the thick of disseminating information for the government and gets a high proportion of its revenue from the government could easily be seen to have a conflict of interest. And that organisation is running the show at the Clinical Evidence Task Force. But some people just don't look past the name.